Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, welcome. Well, with everything that's happened over the past year and everything that continues to happen daily, we might be forgiven for wondering if we can trust anyone, if we can trust businesses, if we can trust what's being said, what's being done. And the big question is, what role does trust play in business today? And how do we know whether we can trust someone? How do we know whether we can trust a business? Do we even understand what trust really is? And maybe just as important, well, I do think it's just as important, how do we become more trustworthy to other people? Well, my first guest is known, if you look her up on twitter.com, she's known as the Trust Lady, and we'll be talking with her in just one moment. In the second half of today's show, we continue our series of The Real Story Behind Entrepreneurism, and this month we're featuring Danita Delamont. She's a local businesswoman who built an international million-dollar stock agency from scratch. And I know she built it from scratch, and I know she's trustworthy because I hooked up with Danita right around the time that she was actually starting her business. She's someone who showed me that, yes, you can have a personal life and build a family and develop great working relationships and be a powerful influence in the community of your profession. So what's her secret? We're going to find out around 12:30 today. First, let me introduce Vanessa Hall. She's an international author and speaker whose work emulates her life. Her business is focused on building trust back into the business world, as well as into homes and communities around the world. She's worked with some of Australia's largest organizations. She speaks at conferences around the world. And her new book is called The Truth About the Trust in Business, How to Enrich the Bottom Line, Improve Retention, and Build Valuable Relationships for Success. Vanessa Hall, welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. How are you going?
I have to say thank you for joining us today. You're joining us from Australia. It's 5 a.m. in the morning there, so I hope you got a good dose of caffeine there. I'd certainly need it at 5 o'clock in the morning. I wanted to begin, Vanessa. I know your work has emulated your life. Trust is extremely important to you, as it is to me and many people out there. Tell us, first of all, what the name of your business is. And what it means in English, because you have a French name for your business.
Yeah, the business name is Entente, and it's French for understanding and good relationship. I was looking for a business name that really meant something that resonated with me and with what we do, and I found that, and I love the way it's written as well. It's a nice balanced word.
So I said you were the Trust Lady on Twitter.
Yes.
How did you get so interested in trust that you actually built a business around it?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a number of things. I think I've had a number of events in my life, as many of us have, that sort of got me questioning, I guess, who I could trust, kind of made a decision at a very young age that I thought the only person that I could trust was me, and went about building my career. I ended up working in financial services in a compliance and risk role, so I was most of the time working at what I call the mistrust end of business. Working with organisations who were, often just doing plainly the wrong thing, mm-hmm. Trying to convince them to do the right thing, by investors or by shareholders and by staff. It was a constant battle, and a lot of people that work in compliance and risk sort of have this issue. And so I knew that I wanted to be about trust, but I didn't know, what that really meant for me or how I was going to go about doing it. So I ran a consultancy for a while that was around that risk and compliance, trying to build a more trustworthy business environment. But it was something that my son gave to me for Mother's Day, coming on to, 4 years ago now. And he'd made this card at school and was very excited about giving it to me on Mother's Day. And it said, my mum is loving and caring. She likes to buy lots of clothes.
She likes to buy lots of clothes.
Funny what kids observe. Yeah. She always writes and reads. Sometimes she can keep promises, But the best thing about my mum is she's always there for me. And I thought, oh, that's really sweet. What do you mean sometimes she can keep promises? I thought it was a really funny thing to put on a card. And he looked at me and he said, well, you don't always keep your promises. And I said to him, are you serious? Can you give me an example? And he said, well, a couple of weekends ago, you said that we'd go to the movies on the weekend and then we didn't go. And I remembered what happened, you know, we got busy and people popped in and that sort of thing. And I said, Jimmy, but that wasn't a promise. And he looked at me and he said, but I thought it was. And then I thought about the times that I did that with him. And then I thought about the times that I did that with friends and with people at work and things. And my head went into a bit of a spin. And I looked at him and I said, what happens when I do that? How does that make you feel? And he was sitting on the end of my bed and he looked me straight in the eye and he said, I don't know when I can trust you.
Oh, bless him.
And it was pretty awful because I think it was the very first time in my life where I realised that I was also breaking down someone's trust. I moved from being the victim to the perpetrator, if you like. I moved from being the one that was able to kind of point the finger of blame to people and say, well, all these people keep breaking down my trust. So suddenly I was actually the one that was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty awful moment for me, but it was really the thing that planted the seed. I wanted to understand this thing about trust because I thought if it's that easy to break it down, then we are probably all doing it, you know, every day. And that's certainly what I have found, in business and in our relationships as well. But the key is to understand just what trust actually really is, and that's what I went on a bit of a mission to search for.
Right. So let's look at how we define trust, because I'm guessing. But many people actually define it very differently. So how do you define trust? And I know you've looked at this in great detail.
Yeah, I've done quite a lot of research. It's interesting because it's a word that we use all the time. And yet when I would begin to ask people, so tell me, what do you mean by trust? What does it mean to you? Most people actually can't put it into words. And we did a survey across Australia, you know, over 600 people, and we asked them, what is trust? And we got almost 600 different responses, common themes. But I thought, well, if we're going to be about trust, if we're going to be about building trust, then we have to first start with the common understanding of what it is that we're actually building. So the way I define trust is that it's our ability to rely on people or on organisations or on products and services to deliver a specific outcome to us. So it's first this concept of about reliability. It's relying on people or things or organisations, but it's to deliver a specific outcome. And the outcome that we each want in each situation is different. But what we have to understand now is what is the outcome that we want? What is it that we're relying on people and organisations for? And that's where my model for trust comes in.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. You have a business model for trust. You talk about expectations and needs and promises. And it certainly made me think about some relationships and difficulties that I've had in relationships a little differently when I reviewed this. I think it's something maybe intrinsically we know and we just kind of gloss over a lot. So let's begin with expectations. How does that fit into the model?
It's one of the first things that we actually look at. And it's about understanding that every time we're in a relationship, could be, you know, with an individual, as an employee with an organisation, could be as a customer buying a product, that we have expectations about what that relationship or what that interaction is going to be like. And the expectations come from previous experiences that we might have had with that person or with that product. They come from things that we read or we see, advertising, you know, marketing material, you know, just watching their behaviour. They come from things that we hear, things that other people tell us. And they also come from what I call like experiences. So we've had an experience with something similar or someone similar. And so we generalise and we'll build those expectations about those people in that instance. But we have to understand that we have these expectations right from the very start. And often they're not even, they may not be realistic. They might be unfair. They might have nothing to do with that particular person, but everything to do with the previous experience that you might have had. But when those expectations are not met, that's when we become disappointed and we feel angry, let down. And so one of the very first things that we begin to look at is is to understand what our expectations are in each situation that we're in.
You say assume absolutely nothing expectation-wise, because what you expect from a relationship, business or personal, could be totally different from the other person.
Mm. There are often, in organisations, there are often common themes in terms of, like, if you had a team of people, you'll find there'll be common things that they expect, but there will always be something that you think, I had absolutely no idea that's what that person expected.
Right.
And where did that even come from? So that's a challenge for management and for leaders to realise that that's going on within their organisation. Someone will be disappointed or upset and they're thinking, I don't know, I've done everything, I don't understand why this person is behaving in this way. One of the very first things that they should look at is, well, what were they actually expecting? Because they may have been expecting something that you had absolutely no intention or no skill or no capability of even delivering. And so what we teach is to begin to manage those expectations, understand what they are, and then you have to manage them.
Right, because even though we think we may have communicated very clearly, what the other person hears sometimes is totally different. So let's look at needs, because the same thing there, our needs can get misinterpreted.
Mm. When I talk about needs, I use Maslow's hierarchy of needs because it seems to be, you know, fairly commonly known. But it's important to understand that we all have needs, basic human needs for physical things, for needs for a sense of safety and security, for a sense of love and belonging, for, you know, esteem needs, to, you know, feel good about ourselves and feel respected. And we have needs for creativity, for, you know, a sense of freedom and, you know, what's known as self-actualization needs. What's interesting is that we choose the relationships that we go into, and we choose the products and services that we engage with, jobs we have, everything that we do, we choose on the base of a need that we're seeking to be satisfied. We're very, very unaware of this. But it's interesting when you start to explore and understand, well, what is the underlying need here? And the need and the expectations will be tied. You might have a number of expectations about something that links to one core need. And so often when the expectations start to drop away, if they're not being met, then we also feel that our need is not being met as well.
The third leg of your business model for trust is promises. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about promises and how that helps build this model for trust. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Vanessa Hall, and her new book is called The Truth About Trust in Business. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcast today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. Oh, I'm losing my headphones here. That won't work. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we're talking about the truth about trust in business. How to Enrich the Bottom Line, Improve Retention, and Build Valuable Relationships for Success is Vanessa Hall's new book. And she specializes in, she's known as the Trust Lady on Twitter. If you look on twitter.com, you'll find her there. Where else can people find you, Vanessa?
I'm on all the usual social media places. I'm on Facebook and I'm also in LinkedIn. They can find me on my website, which is www.entente.com.au.
Great. And so we're talking about the business model for trust, and we've looked at expectations and we've looked at needs. And this one, implicit promises and explicit promises. Let's talk about promises right now. And what we really need to understand about the difference between implicit and explicit promises.
Mm-hmm. The promises, when promises are made to us by an organisation, by individuals, by the products and services that we engage with, it's the promises, the more the promises look like they're going to meet my expectations and my needs, the more I'm drawn to that particular person or that particular company or product over and above another. But the promises, as you say, could be implicit or explicit, which means they're either very, very clearly stated. You know, you'll get this product within 24 hours or, you know, this particular service will do X, Y, and Z. But the implicit promises are the very subtle, the suggested. You know, marketing and advertising is very good at embedding implicit promises within things.
Right.
You know, the staff and this, this shop are always going to be friendly. Because that's what I've seen in the ad. You know, this particular company is of good quality because that's what their brand kind of suggests. So they're very implicit. The interesting thing with the promises, just as with expectations and needs, if they're not met, then they start to sort of these bricks that draw the model like a wall. These bricks start to drop out of the wall. Implicit promises actually can undo us faster than explicit promises. Usually if an explicit promise, something's been very clearly stated, is not delivered, we'll say something. And we're comfortable saying something. As a customer, you might complain. As a staff member, you might sit down and say something to your boss because you can point to it and you can say, but this is the discussion we had or this is what's been written down. With an implicit promise, it's much harder to actually say anything because I've got nothing to point to. I've got nothing to say, but hang on, but this is what you said. But I believed that it was going to happen, and it didn't. Therefore, I'm disappointed. If that implicit promise is linked to an important expectation and an important need, then chances are I'm just out of there. I've gone. It'll be when a staff member will just hand in their resignation, and the manager's wondering what's happened. It's when people just suddenly leave out of a relationship, and you're scratching your head wondering, where did I go wrong? So it's a very, very interesting dynamic when we look at the three together then, you know, in this wall.
Yeah, I want to talk about this because you say that building trust is fundamentally about three things, about managing this business model, basically, managing people's expectations, people's needs, and keep your promises. But how do we manage other people's expectations of us? If we say something, and I'm thinking of a segment in your book where you say to friends, family, coworkers, even if you doubt what I've said to you, even if you doubt my intentions, I want you to think the best of me. So how do we manage other people's expectations when we think we're communicating clearly?
Well, the first thing is to understand what it is that they do expect of you. And it does come down to being able to have a conversation. What's great about the model is that it enables people to have a safe conversation about something that's often difficult to sit down and talk to people about these things. But it's understanding what their expectations are on the basis that if you have an expectation of me that I don't know about or I'm not in a position or have the capability of delivering, then we are going to have problems. There's going to be disappointment and someone's going to get hurt here. So the more I know, the better I can make decisions about how I go about delivering your expectations, or I can manage your expectations for you. So if you've got an expectation that is just simply impossible for me to deliver, then my role then becomes to manage your expectations, to make you to help you understand what I'm capable of doing, what I'm capable of delivering to you. But it's about having that conversation, having it in a caring way, so that people understand I'm not just asking these questions for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking you because I want to understand so I can deliver that, because I want a trusted relationship with you.
I had an email from a listener, Maxine, who said that she works in a very toxic environment. She said she's tried to work with people and there is no trust, period. You advise in the book, build an exit strategy if you're in that situation.
Look, I think at the end of the day, we do often find ourselves in places where there's no trust, where it's toxic, as you said. But at the end of the day, you have a choice. You can spend some time trying to build that trust, to understand what the expectations are, what the needs are, what promises have been made that maybe have been broken, and see if you can play a role in helping repair that. But if you're in a situation where you've got expectations and needs, there have been promises made to you that are just constantly broken, then what you have to understand is unless something changes, unless someone becomes aware of that and maybe they take conscious steps to then, okay, yes, we're going to keep the promises we're making to you and we want to listen to what you've got to say, you're just going to keep getting hurt.
Mm.
So, yeah, I would very much say at the end of the day, your trust is fragile. We all get hurt and feel that pain when trust is broken down. And so you have to decide, do I want to keep feeling like this, or do I find a place where I can talk about what my expectations and needs are and I'm comfortable that the organisation that I'm now working for is able to deliver on those.
Right. Now, if we're in a situation, we've been in a long-term business or personal relationship and trust has been broken for whatever reason, is it possible to rebuild that trust again to the level that it was at? Or maybe it wasn't at the level it needed to be at for it to be broken. I don't know.
Yeah. Look, it is. I think when trust is completely broken, when it's absolutely decimated, it's going to be a long process to actually rebuild it. But what I always tell people is that you can't go back and keep doing what you were doing, because you've proven that didn't work.
Mm.
You've proven that broke down the wall. So what we need to do is now rebuild this ENP wall. We've got to sit down the very first thing, though, is it takes both parties. If one person wants to be in the relationship and the other person doesn't, it's simply not going to work.
Yeah, and the ENP wall you just referred to is the business model we just discussed.
It's the business model. The expectations, needs and promises. So we have to now say, okay, if we're both willing to actually do this, that's the start point. And so we are now going to talk about each other's expectations. What do we each expect of each other? What do we each need? What are we each then prepared to promise each other that's going to meet that? And you just need to do it a little bit at a time. One small promise, keep that. Prove that, okay, yes, maybe I can expect something different now than what we had before.
Mm.
That Rome wasn't built in a day and nor were good, solid, trusting relationships.
Mm. Dr. Stephen Covey has done a lot of work on trust, and he calls you a catalyst for the renaissance of trust taking place today. That's quite a compliment there. He calls trustworthiness, he says this about trustworthiness, it derives from the wisdom in a person at the intersection of the character and competence. I wonder if you'd share your perspective very quickly, because we're almost at the end of our segment, on how we can become more trustworthy to other people.
I have a model for a trustworthy person, which has a set of characteristics. And it's about, what's interesting is, and whilst there's six main characteristics in there, being open and transparent, being honest and speaking with integrity, being genuine and authentic, being courageous and decisive, reliable and proven, caring and empathetic, and each one actually points to different parts of the body. What's interesting about this is, just as we need balance in our body, we also need to balance each of those qualities. So it's actually not enough to just say, well, look, but I always tell the truth. If you're telling the truth but you're doing it in a way that is not caring and empathetic, then you can still break down people's trust in you. If you're very genuine, very true to yourself, but you're not reliable and proven, you have very good intentions, but you don't always deliver on your promises, then you're still breaking down trust with people. So it's, the important thing is to understand what makes up a trustworthy person. What is it that I need to do on a daily basis that lets people know you can trust me? And it actually takes a conscious awareness of that, I think, to really pull it off. And even once you're conscious of it, you know, we still slip up. I still slip up from time to time, and I hold myself, I guess I have very high expectations of myself right. because I talk about it all the time.
Right. I think you're right. I think it does take work to keep it. I certainly learned a lot from looking at that model on how you become more trustworthy, because I think I'm exceptionally trustworthy. And I can see that maybe in some areas I need to be a little bit more open and less private, as I like to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really thank you for being with us today, Vanessa. Great work. And I appreciate you getting up at 5 a.m. in Australia to talk about this with us today. What would you like to leave our listeners with?
I think just be aware that trust steeped in every relationship and every interaction that you have. If you've been listening, you'll become much more aware of it. You'll see the word pop up everywhere. You hear it on radio, you watch it on TV. People are constantly talking about it. But be aware of it and begin to understand this concept of expectations, needs, and promises in every interaction. Take some time just to maybe look at the relationship that hasn't worked and explore it on that basis. You'll be surprised.
Right. And my guest, Vanessa Hall, believes in this so much that she built the ENP model into her wedding vows. And you can find that video on YouTube. Vanessa Hall, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And her book, again, The Truth About Trust in Business, How to Enrich the Bottom Line, Improve Retention, and Build Valuable Relationships for Success. Well, please stay with us. We're continuing our discussion on trust and the real story behind entrepreneurism. Today, we're featuring Danita Dalamont. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
If financial worries keep you awake at night, or you despair at the hope of ever becoming debt-free, make sure you tune in next Monday at noon. Mitchell Allen joins Vicky on Conversations Live to offer practical financial solutions, including solving credit problems on your own, tips for dealing with creditors, the facts and myths of bankruptcy, and how to emerge from constant worry to building a financially secure life. That's coming next Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See program details at conversationslive.net. And if you want to get your questions answered confidentially by a debt management expert, call Vicky at 800-495-7000. 7617 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Alternative Talk 1150 is now being broadcast in digital quality on FM 98.9 HD3. So rejoice, you early adopters of technology.
And welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And today, in this segment, we're talking about the real story behind entrepreneurism. And I have somebody here that I'm very pleased is joining me today, Danita Delamont. Let me give her an official intro here, and then we're going to share Danita's journey and her success journey through business throughout the rest of this segment. She's described, and I know this to be a fact, as a walking, talking atlas of the world. She's the CEO of Delamont Herbig & Associates, an international stock photography agency. This is a company she built from scratch into a $1 million business. She's based right here in Bellevue, but does business all over the world. And Conversations Live is proud to feature her today in the real story behind entrepreneurism. Danita, welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicky. It's so much fun to be here. Truly.
Well, we're going to share your journey, and we're going to go back to the beginning. But before we get back to the beginning, if I can find my right notes here, I want to read something from Danita's website to our listeners, because I think this encapsulates the essence of Danita and and how she works. This is on her website, danitadelamont.com. And it says, "We at Danita Delamont Stock Photography are a group of fun-loving professionals striving for quality lifestyle, enriched through our work with exceptional images and exceptional image makers. Many of us are developing alternate businesses or raising families, and our time at Danita's gives us the flexibility to build our dreams while working to help extraordinary photographers achieve their goals."
And that's the truth.
It is the truth. I know it to be true. So I want to go back and just talk about how you got into stock photography, or even before that, when you met Wolfgang Kähler, who's mm-hmm. a very well-known photographer. You were on a cruise ship. Tell us how you met him and how that led to working for him.
Well, it all started on the Amazon River in 1980 when I was working for Society Expeditions. And that was one of the first expedition adventure travel companies going all over the world with lecturing programs on board with anthropologists, marine biologists. And he was taking photos of people and developing pictures in his dark room, which was in his own stateroom, and then putting them up and selling them to the passengers. And that's how I met Wolfgang. He ended up coming back to Seattle and working for Society Expeditions, where I was working. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of years, we decided to start our own little business. He was getting lots of photo requests from picture editors and photo editors for travel magazines. And he was one of the first shooters going down to Antarctica and up the Amazon. So that's how it started with me. Mm. And I worked with him for 18 years.
18 years. And then, you know, life is all about turning points. Mm-hmm. We all have turning points. You have this turning point in your life. You're thinking, what do I do? You're a gourmet cook. Mm-hmm. You really want to cook.
Yeah.
How did you end up going the photography route again?
Well, it's interesting. I grew up all over the world, and I have a degree in cultural anthropology. So all these years that Wolfgang was traveling all over the world, I was learning about these different cultures. My husband, Dave Herbig, and I were traveling as well all over the world. And so it was really a nice balance to be able to continue learning about all these places. But after 18 years with Wolfgang, it was like, as much as I love Wolfgang, he's like a brother to me, it was time for me to start my own business. And I wanted to be able to work on my own terms, not plan my days around his journeys, because he would travel all over the place. And it just took us a while to finally realize that I needed to not have to stop everything when he would take off on assignment. Mm. So that was probably the turning point. That was 1999, about 10 years ago.
About 10 years
ago. Also, my son was about, I don't know, my son was 10, and I was wanting to do more and having the flexibility to go do things with him, too. Mm. So this it was time for me to do my own thing.
So, and you started very small. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you started. And
well, well, because we work with very high-end tour operators like Abercrombie and Kent, High Country Passage, Stanford Alumni Tours, all of these very high-end museum and natural history sort of travel programs. I knew that I would need to have high-quality photography from some of the best photographers, travel and wildlife photographers, but I really didn't realize how many images I would need to keep the clients coming back for mm-hmm. more and more. Because after a while, you run out of images. And I thought, well, I'll have maybe 10, 15 photographers, and I'll just choose some of the very best, and that should take care of me. But every year, the same clients would come back for photos for their brochures, the same itineraries, again and again and again. And I knew from my experience with Wolfgang that we would run out of photos unless I started bringing in more photographers. So what started as 10, 15 photographers is now about 300 photographers, and they're globally based. They're all over the world. I look for photographers with depth and breadth in a subject matter, people that have spent a lot of time in the bush documenting a species habitat, its ecosystem, the cycle of its lives, and also travel photographers that go back to a place again and again and again because they have special access for it, or they really want to document it in all the seasons. So it's not just someone traveling through very quickly, but they have real deep files of these types of subjects.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about what you attribute to your success. I know what I think makes you successful, but because I obviously know Danita, but I want you to tell me what you think has made you so successful.
Well, I think having a very positive attitude. And I also believe that going back to the earlier segment that you had, believing in yourself, you have to trust in yourself. And from the beginning, I knew that I could do this. I knew that I understood what it was that I wanted to do for mm-hmm. myself. And I knew that I could find people that would want to work with me. So I think being an outgoing, friendly, open person. I'm very open. I'm not very closed. What you see is what you get with Danita, and I pretty much tell it like it is. I don't try to hide things from anybody, and I just try to be very honest and upfront with everyone.
Mm. And I want to talk about how you actually started your business, because you were a mom. First and foremost, you were a mom and
mm-hmm.
a wife
mm-hmm.
and a scout leader.
That's right.
You wanted a business, but hey, it's got to fit into my life, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And you made it work. So tell us, you started out part-time. I don't know if you still, what kind of hours you keep right now, but I know the business has certainly grown. You've got a lot of people working for you now.
Mm-hmm.
But you started out on a part-time basis.
I did, and now we have four full-time people, and then we have some other people that work remotely for us on different keywording projects and marketing projects and things like that. But for me, I the most important thing for me was to be there for my family. I knew that I could work this particular business around my schedule. I could go on the field trips and be with my son. We have one son, my husband Dave Herbig and I. Davis is our son. He's 20 now, and he's at the University of Washington. And I wanted to also be involved in Scouts. My family grew up all over the world, and every place we went, we joined Scouts and the church, and all of a sudden we had two communities that we were part of our family. And so I became the Scout Cub Master, Cub Scout Leader.
Cub Scout Leader,
and did that for about 6 years. And then my husband went on to be a Boy Scout leader, and I'm happy to say our son Davis is an Eagle Boy Scout, and you know, we're real proud mm-hmm. of him for doing that.
Now, I would be remiss of me not to mention Dave, who's over in the corner taking photographs of you while we're talking here, because I know he's been an integral part of your business. I mean, first of all, he supported you. You know, it's not easy to start a business. You have to put money out there. And I know that was a concern in the beginning.
Absolutely.
That, you know, and then eventually, I mean, he supported you all along the way and has come into the business and I would guess help you get to where the business is now. So talk a little bit about what it's like to work with your husband, how you keep things fresh as a couple. I ask because I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs, and they all work together.
Well, we have a very big house, and we have a home office, and Dave's office is on the upper floor, and mine is on the lower floor. So he has his own business as well, BadgeMagic.com. It's for Boy Scout and Girl Scout peel and stick patches. You don't have to sew them on anymore.
Right.
But anyway, from the beginning, if I didn't have Dave's support, I could not have done this. There's no way, because it's an expensive endeavor, and it's a long-term endeavor before you start seeing money coming back for all the efforts that you put out, especially in the publishing world, where you're publishing calendars and textbooks that take a year to come to fruition, mm-hmm. and then they finally send the bill in, and you eventually get some a check, and then the photographers get the check. So you have to be able to have some money stashed somewhere, or credit cards to float money around, or something in order to get to a point where you can be successful.
Mm. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Danita Dalamont. She is the CEO of Dalamont Herbig & Associates, an international stock photography agency. And although they work all over the world, they are based right here in Bellevue. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. If you have comments or questions on any of our shows, we want to hear from you. Email info@conversationslive.net. Call Vicki toll-free at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or leave a message at our special listener voicemail box, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say, "There's no place like Alternative Talk 1150. Pictures of your mama taken by your papa a long time ago. Our people with each other to prove they love each other a long time ago.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and my special guest in this segment is Danita Dalamont. She's a local businesswoman and the CEO of Dalamont Herbig & Associates Stock Photography Agency. I want to ask you, Danita, first of all, your business went through many changes because when you started out, I should say I used to work with you, and we used to count slides, remember? And neither one of us could count.
I do remember that.
But you started out with slides, and then everything switched digital, and you had to make the move. You just kept moving with the times. A lot of people resist change. What would you say to people who are resisting change about getting on board with a program?
Well, I think it's really important to embrace it. My staff would be laughing at me right now because every time they put a new software program on my computer or change my computer, it drives me crazy. But it's important to change, and you have to be ahead of the game if you want to be successful. I think because I'm involved with so many associations on a high level as far as, you know, executive boards, and I meet with clients and colleagues all over the world, really, I see what's happening and what's coming down the pipe, so I can position my agency a little ahead of the game, which helps us a little bit.
Right. Relationships are very key in your business. Mm-hmm. You had, as you said, worked for 18 years with Wolfgang. You took a break while you decided, do I cook? Do I do photos?
Yep.
Which direction do I go in? But you built up and established some really solid relationships. And I think because I came at that time from a very male-oriented background, it was very different for me to see how you worked. At that time, Danita would send out mail talking about her scout leadership, and and cooking, and I didn't see, I thought, well, this isn't going to work, but my gosh, it surely did. So talk to us about relationships and how you've developed those good relationships.
Well, I think because I'd worked in the industry for so long before I started my agency, I had developed existing relationships with people to start with. And I think, too, that the women in this industry really support each other. And for that reason, I think that when I did leave Wolfgang to start my own agency, they wanted to help and support me. But I think we all realize that we're all in this together. And no matter what you do or what your part is, if you understand how we're all interconnected and how we can help each other out in whatever way it is, then we all end up in a better space, and it's a win-win for everybody. But with my long-term clients and my new clients today, the important thing is the trust that we built by providing them with the right kind of content that they need for their projects. They know that what they're getting from us is accurate and appropriate. Mm-hmm. It's all part of the relationships. And talking to people on the phone. You know, forget about the email. The emails are fine from time to time, but pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. Have a conversation one-on-one and understand their voice inflection and talk to them about not just their business, but their families. You know, their father who's having foot surgery, or their mother who's being returned to a retirement home, or their son who just got, in a car accident or got an award. You need to talk to people on a different level and not just about business, because then they realize that you're human. You know, you're not after their business.
Right.
You want to know about them as a person.
Yeah. And as I said, I came from a very male-dominated background, and I think also it depends on what industry you work in little.
That's probably
to
true.
To some extent.
Well, you were in banking, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about challenge as well, because at the time, Corbis is one of the, I don't know if Corbis is still around.
Oh,
did
yeah.
they get swallowed by Getty or the other
no,
way around?
No, Getty and Corbis are still two
They're
of the strongest
around.
Ones.
Well, they are two of the strongest agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this on The Real Story Behind Entrepreneurism before. You don't have to have a unique, original idea. You just have to do what you do really well and find a niche for it. Did you have any trepidation at all going up against big agencies like that?
I really didn't, because I felt I knew my subject matter better than anybody at any of those companies. They could bring any photo editors in, but they would not have 20 years of background working with those subjects. And so especially for worldwide travel destination content and nature, behavior, an animal, a species behavior, the habitat, how it changes with the seasons and all of that. I understand that. I've got it in my head. So I could find photographers with that kind of content, and I would see it and know what it was right there on my monitor or on the light table in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I never really felt intimidated by them at all, because I think as a small niche agency that specializes in worldwide travel and culture and nature and wildlife, that people can come to my site and they can specifically go for those subjects and not have to wade through millions of photos to find them. It's, this whole industry has become so overwhelming because there's such a saturation of images in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And most people complain about how long it takes them to search for photos, because they have to go through so many, 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 many pages of images before they find the right one.
Right. And I did mooch around on your site, and you do royalty-free images now, because I work with a lot of creative directors, and they're always looking for good royalty-free images. I think one of the great things about your photos, you just don't put photos up there unless they work.
Well, and when I'm editing the images, it's hard to explain this to people, but when I'm editing a photographer's submission, it's in my head all the different kinds of clients and the plethora of different kinds of photo specs that have come across my desk over the years. And so if I'm looking at a submission, I'll be looking for my textbook clients, I'll be looking for my calendar clients, I'll be looking for nature magazines or travel clients. And there's just so many different types of uses for images, and you can't just put some young person right out of college into that sort of a position to look for photos, because they don't understand what is needed out there.
Right. Now, you work with all kinds of photographers. They're not all full-time photographers, right?
No, nope, they're all over the place.
You're just concerned about good images.
That's
good,
right.
Good quality images and trustworthy people.
Yeah, I will say, though, that I get so many photographers coming after me to have me represent them, that it's hard to screen them all. Mm-hmm. And I have, you know, one in my office, Jonathan, I let him take a look at the websites initially, and then he'll recommend them or not, because I don't have enough time in the day to review everyone's images. But I found that in the beginning, I wanted to give serious amateurs a chance. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to have an opportunity to have their images up, and students too. You know, young students that had a really good eye that I meet through NAMPA, the North American Nature Photography Association, I like to give them a chance. But what I found over the years is that when I bring in these amateurs, it takes a lot of time to teach them the business. They all have the same questions about how to prepare the images and why haven't my photos sold and when will I get a check and all of that sort of stuff. They don't understand how long it takes for
the turnaround.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Same in any kind of editorial work as well. Yeah. Yeah. You took a 2-year position as the national president of ASPP, the American Society of Picture Professionals, a strategic approach. How did that help your business?
That was probably one of the best things I ever did. And I knew when the opportunity came to me that it would be a good thing to do. My first question was, do you think I'm qualified? And they said, are you kidding? You've been doing this for 18 years. And we've been asking people all around the country who would be a good national president, and your name keeps coming up. So I was really honored. Mm-hmm. And I went for it with the gusto. And I went to all the different chapters around the country, and I met with the different chapter members. And from that came speaking engagements and requests to write articles for columns in journals and magazines and things like that. And things just went from one thing to another. I work with PACA now, which is the Picture Agency Council of America. That's for stock agencies. I'm on the board for NAMPA, which is the mm-hmm. North American Nature Photography Association.
Now, some people might say, you know, I have enough to do running my business. And I know this was a concern for mm-hmm. you when you became president, because mm-hmm. your business is starting out and, you know, what's the best use of my time? But I do think that giving of our time like that can come back 10,000-fold.
It absolutely does. And, I mean, really, the exposure is amazing. And now my husband is involved, and he's on the board of PACA. But by being involved in these memberships, you meet people. And there are so many opportunities that come through people that you meet. I mean, there's Boyd Norton. He's this great photographer who spent years in Africa. Kristen Mosier, she photographs chimps at the Gombe Reserve because her husband manages the reserve there, mm-hmm. Jane Goodall's reserve. Christian Ziegler, he, you know, is at the Smithsonian Institute based in Panama. And he's an entomologist, and he comes through and he starts talking and showing us all these photos and about capturing the rainforest creatures mm-hmm. and bugs and things like that. I mean, there's so many interesting people that you meet by becoming members of whatever organization it is that you're interested in, and right. I would highly recommend that.
Right. We're almost coming to the end of our segment. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received? What's the worst piece of advice you've ever received?
Advice that I've received? Well, my husband has always told me I should become a better manager. And that was probably the best piece of advice. But I probably haven't followed through on it as well as I should.
She's looking at Dave here to see.
I don't know.
Does she give a nod?
Worst piece of advice? I don't know, Vicki. I don't think I can answer that.
Well, you probably didn't follow it if you didn't take the best piece.
I can give you my advice.
All right. Why don't we sign off today, Danita Delamont? It's been great talking with you and to reconnect with you. Leave us with your best piece of advice today.
Well, I would say if you're working out of a home office, the best piece of advice is get up in the morning, put your makeup on, dress for going to the office as a professional, and then when you're on the email and you're on the telephone, you will be much more professional and you won't let the day slip away. I really believe that.
This is true. And you do work from the lower floor of your house.
Yes, which has a beautiful view of the Olympic Mountains uh-huh, in Lake Washington. Uh-huh.
And I know your husband loves his 8-foot screening room. His screening whatever
home
you call
theater.
It. There you go, home theater. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today, and let's give out your website again, danitadelamont.com.
And that's danitadelamont.com. And Vicki, it's just been such a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And before I leave you today, I want to thank everyone for being with us. But before I leave you, I want to say bon voyage to Mr. Eric Ryder. He's taking off to Reykjavik and the UK next week. And this boy is headlining in London. tell us all about it.
Oh, well, I have a band and we're doing a show over there. It's going to be fun.
There you go. He's very modest, but
concise.
He's excited. And Eric, I appreciate everything you do for us.
Thank you so much.
Safe travels, and we look forward to having you back.
I appreciate that.
And we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Thank you so much for being with us today on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And you can check out our upcoming guest schedule at conversationslive.net. And you can leave any feedback or comments on today's show for me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Live well, live strong.
If financial worries keep you awake at night, or you despair at the hope of ever becoming debt-free, make sure you tune in next Monday at noon. Mitchell Allen joins Vicki on Conversations Live to offer practical financial solutions, including solving credit problems on your own, tips for dealing with creditors, the facts and myths of bankruptcy, and how to emerge from constant worry to building a financially secure life. That's coming next Monday at noon on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See program details at conversationslive.net. And if you want to get your questions answered confidentially by a debt management expert, call Vicki at 800-495-7617 or email info@conversationslive.net.